There's a place in America called Parksville, New York. And in Parksville, New York, there's a very special camp called Camp Hask. And tonight's shiur is dedicated to those heroes that work in Camp Hask, that are mamish making the world a better place, and bringing a tremendous amount of Simchas HaChaim into the world. And really the inspiration for this shiur, by and large, is drawn, even though we're here in Eretz Yisrael, and usually the rest of the world is drawing its chiyus from Eretz Yisrael, but tonight we're drawing our chiyus from Parksville. One of the themes that we've been harping on all summer is this concept of happiness. And you've heard me say before that this obsession with happiness is very unhealthy. People writing books about happiness, everything is, am I happy? I don't know if I'm happy like this. We're way too obsessed with happiness. We're way too obsessed with happiness. And the truth is, even though it seems like happiness should be something that we're focused on, the truth is it's coming. Happy people don't talk about happiness. There's a movement today in the world of, I'm not happy, I'm not happy enough. Where is all this coming from? Without getting into all the numbers, we all know ourselves. Without getting into all the numbers, we are the most over-medicated generation in the history of the world. We have more than many generations have ever had, and yet depression is rampant. And we know, I'm saying, it's not, again, I'm not talking now about chemical depression, which is obviously different, but some people walking around, what's bothering you? I don't even know what's bothering me. There's something very broken about a system that isn't naturally generating a certain Simchas HaChaim. So I want to go over some things that we spoke about this summer and maybe just to get a new insight. There's a difference between existence and life. You've heard this from me before. Existence takes up space. That's the scientific definition of existence. If I can touch it, it's taking up space. It physically exists. Existence has conditions. For example, I need to sustain existence. So what do I need to do to sustain existence? In the case of a human being, if I'm not eating, my existence is going to die. If I'm not drinking, my existence is going to die. If I don't have appropriate lodging, my existence is going to die. Eventually the weather will destroy me. So existence takes up space, and it also has conditions. It's very finite. That's the nature of existence. And if I don't meet the conditions of existence, then existence will cease to exist. And life, we said, is not that way. The life of something is its character. But tonight we're going to do a little bit better than just saying that the life of something is its character. Tonight we're going to speak out a particular inyan that the life of something is its contribution. Not just its character, but its contribution. Its character is what it contributes to the world. So for example, the life of a fire is that it radiates light, that it gives off warmth, that it gives off heat. This is the life of a fire. Now, a fire is very nice, but a fire is more meaningful when there's a human being that's being nene from that fire. So the fire is in a state of contributing, and then a human being can come along and will be able to utilize the character of the fire. So the existence of the fire is the amount of space that the fire takes up. The life of the fire is what it contributes to the world. Life and existence, though they often go together, can also be at odds with one another. So for example, in our world, and not so, we'll see, maybe in Shemayim, but in our world, to the degree that something exists, it has the opportunity to contribute life. But without existence, it can't contribute any life. So for example, in our world, kodem kol, you need to take up space. So I'm a human being. Kadosh Baruch Hu created me. That's amazing. Now I take up a certain amount of physical space. That is an opportunity for me to be endowed with life, for all of us to be endowed with life. And then the life is what we contribute to the world. So if there's no existence, if chas v'shalom we die, so then we have no opportunity to share our life with everybody else. This is why the Torah teaches us that a person needs to be exceedingly careful when it comes to protecting his existence. Ushmartem ma'od es nafshoseichem. We are taught, the Torah teaches us, your existence is a precious gift because it's an opportunity to sustain life. If you don't take care of the physical vessel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, so then you're not going to have the opportunity to share life. So l'mashal, when it comes to certain unhealthy habits, again, we don't need to get into the prate pratim, but when it comes to, let's say, to unhealthy habits, those habits of that diminish brain cells or that cause lungs to be shriveled up. So it's a davar pashat. Again, without getting into the technicalities of Rav Moshe's tshuva, but it's a davar pashat that it's aser. Even Rav Moshe, who said it, maybe it's not so aser, only said because Shomer Pesayim Hashem, because Hashem protects the fools. Because it's a foolish thing. It's a stupid thing to take your existence and to diminish it. Why would you diminish your existence? That existence is a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam. On the one hand. But on the other hand, existence and life don't always go together. I'll tell you why. Because existence takes up space. Now from an existence perspective, and we've spoken this out already, from an existence perspective, how much space do we want to take up? Chevra, how much space do we want to take up? We want to take up as much existence as possible. Now I need to explain this to you. This is very important. Why does existence want to take up so much space? There's two reasons. The first reason that existence wants to take up space is because the nature of existence is that it takes up space. So the more space you have, the more existence you have. So from this perspective, Chevra, if you have the opportunity, let's say all things being equal, if you have the opportunity to get a really big house, a really beautiful house, or to get a small house that's not so beautiful, so then what do you want?
Big house.
Obviously you want a big house. That's a davar pashut. You want a nice house. But Chevra, there's another reason. Chevra, there's another reason that we want, that existence wants to take up space. Existence wants to take up space because it lives with a fear. The fear of existence is that it will cease to be. That's the fear of existence. Now, Chevra, listen carefully. Why is that the fear of existence? That's the fear of existence because by definition, existence is finite. And anything that's finite, if you could talk to it, if you could talk to that which exists, what it would say is, one day I won't. And that's a petrifying thought. One day I won't exist. So what's the answer to that? If one day I won't exist, the feeling, so to speak, that existence has is I want as much existence as possible. This kaviyachal is like somebody who has an impoverished mentality. They're so afraid that they don't have, that they become hoarders. And that's not healthy. A person has to know that I exist and I have to take care of that existence. But my existence, one day will cease to exist, and that's okay. And yet many people spend their life, because of this fear, because of the fear that existence has, they run after existence as much as possible. I need the nicest house. I need the nicest car. I need to go on the nicest vacations. I have to have a house in Florida. I have to have a house in the Hamptons. I have to have a house in Teaneck or the Five Towns. And of course I have an apartment in Eretz Yisrael, of course. Why? Yeah, because because existence, the more existence that I have, the better. The problem is, when existence takes up so much space, sometimes we lose out on life. Because we're so busy creating an existence that we forget about life. So, paradoxically, what happens? It's a crazy thing. When I have a lot of existence, existence feels great. But I might be very lonely. And now if I'm lonely, who do I have to share my life with? Let's make this very practical. We all know this story. It's a famous story. We all know the father that works so hard during the week. He does. He works so hard to give his children. He works so hard to give his children everything. And his children, again, they really are be'etzim very grateful, even if they don't express it. They really are be'etzim very grateful. What happens to that father come Sunday afternoon? He's exhausted. He's pashut exhausted. And all he's thinking about Sunday afternoon is Monday is coming and I have to run to the city and my crazy job, all to support my family, which is amazing. So Sunday afternoon is Little League. And there's two fathers. There's the father that coaches Little League or shows up at the game to root his kid on. And then there's the father that's part of the carpool that drops the kid off because Baruch Hashem, I don't have to worry about my kid for a couple hours now. And again, nobody's here to judge. Obviously, every situation is different. But Chevra, if you have the father that shows up at the game or coaches the game, even though you know that he's exhausted, how amazing a feeling is that? I was very blessed. My father coached Little League. I have to tell you something. You know, they say today, it's not quantity time, it's quality time. But the truth is, now we know, it's quantity time too. It's not quantity time, it's quality time. Yeah, but if you spend 20 minutes of quality time with your kid is not going to be happy. You should know that I know the sacrifice that my father made on a Sunday afternoon because my father lives and breathes the NFL. To not watch a game live, yeah, so that he could coach his kids. Chevra, when you're in your 30s and 40s and 50s, you know what's going to stay with you? It's going to stay with you. My father sacrificed for me. Or the time that you spend, even again, playing board games with your children. Doesn't it make you feel alive? Doesn't it make you feel connected? And you know as the kids. I know as the parent, but you know as the kids. That's the most connective experience. This is like they say, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cursed the Nachash, and he said, you're gonna eat all the dust of the earth. Why is that a curse? He has food now wherever he goes. So you know the famous mashal that they say. The mashal is about a child whose mother passes away, and he's very close with his father. And the father starts dating a woman. And the woman and the kid do not get along. And the father wants to marry this woman. And she says, I will marry you on one condition. You can have nothing to do with your son. You can have nothing to do with your son. And for whatever reason, the father chooses the wife, which is, of course, a horrible decision to make, or to even have to make. For whatever reason, the father chooses the wife. And so he comes to his son and he says, here's my credit card. Here's my credit card. Buy anything you want. This is unlimited. I'm a wealthy man. I'm telling you, you want a house? Buy a house. You want the fanciest car? Buy the fanciest car. You want to go to any game? Go to any game. It doesn't matter. What's the son feeling, Chevra? It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. What do I want more than money? I want a relationship with my father. So this is the paradox, Chevra. A person could spend their life enhancing their existence, and yet when it comes to their life, they're incredibly lonely. Or the opposite. A person could spend their time building a life, and it doesn't really matter what existence they have. I'll tell you, Ledugmo, a very inspiring person in my life is my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law is a very inspiring person in my life. He's been sitting and learning now for 14 years, married for 14 years. And Chevra, he grew up just like us. He went to MTA, he went to YU, normal guy. Baruch Hashem, he values Torah over everything else. He's raising his kids in a 2.5-bedroom apartment on the 5th floor of an apartment building in Yerushalayim with no elevator. And by the way, when I say half a bedroom, it's not half a bedroom. That's the merpeset sheirut that he turned into a bedroom. For those that know what a merpeset sheirut is, that's like the tiny place where you have where you hang your laundered clothing. That's his half a bedroom. And Kanayna Hara has 8 children. Kanayna Hara, 8 children. Living in a 2.5 bedroom. In Chevra, if you walk into that apartment, the Simchas HaChaim is in the walls. His kids are so happy. And he's so happy. There's something radiating out of his house that's unbelievable. And I've seen big houses in my life. The Simchas HaChaim that's coming out of his tiny apartment in Yerushalayim is 20 times, 30 times the amount of Simcha that's coming out of those big houses. Why? Because sometimes when you get so caught up in existence, you forget about life. When you make the investment in life, it pays dividends in life, which is, of course, a much more valuable commodity than existence. Because existence is finite, but life is infinite. Does this make sense? You getting this? Chevra, is it worth fighting over existence? Think for a second. Is it worth fighting over existence?
What sounds?
In any sense, is there ever a time that it's worth it to fight over existence? Give me an example.
Someone wants to kill you.
Okay, good. So if somebody is going to threaten my existence and that I won't be able to have a life, it's a good time to fight for your existence. Let's say somebody comes to you and says, I want some space. Do you give them that gift?
No, not for free.
I would say, that's incredibly Jewish of you. Yeah? I would say just the opposite. I would say if somebody wants existence, give it to them. Give it to them. That's an unbelievable gift. Why? Because it costs you very little. Existence is not expensive. The only time that I would fight for existence is when it means that I'm going to lose my life. I get political for a second. I wouldn't give back one inch of Eretz Yisrael. I wouldn't give back one inch. So some people say that they wouldn't give back land because you can't really trust that it's going to create peace. I have a different story. I won't give back Eretz Yisrael because Eretz Yisrael is not existence, it's life. This is not just land. This is not dirt. So if that's what you think Eretz Yisrael is, if you think Eretz Yisrael is dirt, so you have dirt here and you have dirt in America and you have dirt in Russia and you have dirt in Poland. I'm not living in this particular space because the dirt is better here than over there, or the grass is greener on this side. Adrabba, I'm living here because the Rebbeinu Shalom gifted me with this land. There's something that I'm supposed to do here. That's not existence, that's life. Make sense? So how could you even give back one inch? And yes, it's even worth dying for. And, maybe a controversial statement for the night, it's even worth living for. Yeah? Which means that with all of the very meaningful reasons that a person can't live in Eretz Yisrael, im kol zeh, try your best to live here. Because this is where life is. So, a lot of people, they're very proud of Israel in their hashkafa. But then lamaisa, okay, but now let's, this is what I love when they say to me, but let's be realistic. Yeah, here. That's a very existence-oriented attitude. Now again, the Chazal do give us reasons why a person can't live in Eretz Yisrael. They say a person can't live in Eretz Yisrael if Harbatz HaTorah is going to be better for him in America, if finding a Shidduch is going to be better for him in America, if Parnassa... Again, Parnassa is not such a reason today. You understand? When I say Parnassa, people go, Parnassa, I can't make a Parnassa. First of all, it's much harder to make a Parnassa today than in America as an Orthodox Jew than it is in Israel. But even aside from that, those are the reasons. Those are the reasons. But I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable, Chavra, is existence. Existence, by its definition, is uncomfortable. Right? So where is the destination of Yidden? The destination of Yidden is here. So yes, it's worth dying for, and it's also worth living for. Dvarim Pshutim, no? Should be Dvarim Pshutim. Moshe Rabbeinu is told... We are told about him that he is anav mikol adam. What does that mean, Chevra? He's incredibly humble. And what's the halacha, Chevra? When it comes to all midos, you have to be in moderation, except for
humility.
Why is it that humility is not meant to be in moderation? Chevra, you know what the answer is? It's an unbelievable thing. Humility really means I'm not proud of the space that I take up. That's what humility means. When you're looking at yourself, you go, this is what I would be proud of? If existence is me, let's get really definitive about this for a second. If I am existence, then what's the difference between me and you? What's the difference between me and an animal? And what's the difference between me and a table? So the difference really is only in degrees, right? If existence defines me, so then I'm here, this is me, and you're you. So you exist, I exist, is there anything unique about me? No, I exist in this shape, and you exist in that shape, right? That's not unique, that's not special, that's not meaningful. What about the difference between me and an animal? He also exists, he exists in a particular shape. Is that unique, is that special? No, he's just a different shape. So my shape happens to be able to, you know, have thought. But again, that's already life. That's not existence anymore. So I'm not particularly proud of existence. So you know, we're told, be exceptionally humble. Why? Stop valuing your space. That is not the be-all and end-all. Adarabha chevra, the more humble you are, the less space you take up, what happens? The more your life shines. So chevra, listen very carefully, because this is a very important point now. If my existence is so bolate, if my existence is so obvious, it conceals life. And it doesn't allow life to do what it needs to do. But if existence is taken down, if it's become humble, so it becomes clear and allows life to shine forth. However, you know the number one cause, really, of the destruction of relationships today? It's an unbelievable arrogance. That's really the destruction of relationships. Because I'm so busy fighting for existence that I'm not letting you in to share my life with you. That's why relationships are falling apart all over the place. Does that make sense? Think about every fight you've ever had with a friend. Was it ever worth it? Was it ever really meaningful? Was it really ever meaningful? Wasn't really ever something worth it? It's not the nature of existence. Humility says, I'm not going to fight for something that's not meaningful. Adarabha, what I'm going to fight for is you. Kevin, that's a big statement. You're worth fighting for. I'm not going to fight with you, but you're worth fighting for. It's an unbelievable thing, no? So where does depression come from? And I'm not talking about chemical depression now. I'm talking about emotional depression. The world today is walking around in a very depressed place, no? Well, unhappy. Everyone's addicted to their technology. Everyone's unhappy. Where does this come from? Yeah. I'm not talking about a physiological, you know, chemical imbalance that you have in your head. I'm talking about the regular depression that every modern Orthodox American teenager that I've met in the last 8 years is walking around with. And I don't mean to limit it to any particular sect of Judaism. It just happens to be where I work. I'm saying this general malaise. Again, not everybody, but many, many, many people. Yeah?
Materialism.
Okay, so a good answer is because since we're an overwhelmingly materialistic society, somehow that created the depression. And Shia, it's a great answer, except for one thing. We still need to understand why that is. But you're 100% right. We just need to go a little deeper. Yeah?
Lack of relationships.
Okay, that's true. It's true. Again, 100%, since there's a chisaron in relationships... So there's something missing, but we're still not there definitively. Yeah?
It's not like social media, you see what everyone else has, and then you become jealous.
For sure. Social media has created a FOMO like we've never had before. I didn't know that life could be so good until I saw you skiing in the Alps. And here I am, and I'm only skiing in Hunter Mountain in New York on my ski trip, you know, with that I have a tag on my... I probably still have that tag on my coat from 1996. Yeah? So yeah, so there's an unbelievable FOMO, but still, there's something that's driving that. We need to get at what it is, yeah?
People value existence over life.
There you go. There you go, you're 100%, I'm sorry. I know, I was coming to you next. Yeah, you're 100% right. That's exactly, all of those things that you said, whether it's materialism, whether it's a chisaron in relationships, whether it's FOMO, all of those things come down to, I value existence over life. Isn't that what's driving that FOMO? I need to know who has the best existence because I want that existence. I'm willing to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get the new iPhone so that I can walk around the next day and go, check it out, I have the new iPhone. But your old iPhone was fine. Yeah, I know, but now I have the new one. And somehow I just saw again in Boca Raton Synagogue, they had to put, I think it was in Boca Raton Synagogue, they had to put up a thing. There's like a Holocaust memorial that apparently was tagged in Pokemon Go. So the shul put out a thing that they've messaged the Pokemon Go, and they're asking them to please take down Pokemon Go from their Holocaust sign, and that everyone in the shul should be aware that they shouldn't let in strangers to play Pokemon Go by their Holocaust sign, right? This is not normal. This is not normal human behavior. I'm saying sometimes I say these things like it's a joke, but it's not a joke, it's just distorted. The truth is that existence, as we said, is pathetic. If you think about an existence, give me one second, if you think about an existence-oriented life, it's very pathetic. Because existence means, A, I'm no different than any of you, there's nothing unique about me. Not only that, existence means I can't really be close, I can't really be intimate with you. I can't really, really become one with you. All I could be is close, right? Because existence takes up space. So if I'm in an existence place, and you're in an existence place, then the most we can get is close. But to really become one, to really be deep with each other, that's very difficult. Chavra, who said before, somebody said about social media. Social media is a great example of this, because it's a lot of people talking at each other, and very few people talking to each other. This, again, I don't mean to make fun of it, because I do it also sometimes, and I shouldn't. But when you talk to somebody, this is like social skills drills. When you're talking to somebody, try not to text at the same time. Try your best not to text at the same time. One of the key components of relationships is actually looking at each other when you talk. Yeah, it sounds like a funny thing, but you have to say it, right? Because this, if somebody's having a conversation with me, and I'm going like this, yeah, no, I'm listening. I'm with you. How does that make another person feel? It's a terrible thing to say, no? So existence, from an existence perspective, number one, it's pathetic. Because we're all basically the same. Even more than that, if you're sitting and texting, if you're sitting on your phone, you're not connecting to people. I don't care if you think you're listening. You're not. Here's a third way of saying it. Chevra, if your existence is arrogant, then it's taking up so much space, eventually you get crushed under the weight of your own existence. Because I can't possibly hold my existence. It's too big. And the bigger that I make it, the more arrogant I am, the more impossible it is to hold. And so eventually what I'm left with is I'm left with this gigantic existence, and I don't know how to shoulder the burden of it. And by the way, when you get older, this is what you hear from people. They're like, I have a huge mortgage, I have nice homes, my family expects that I'm going to give them this and give them that, right? And ultimately what's going on is all of that arrogance that went into existence is crushing people. So, Memela, they're left very depressed. Yes, I have
two questions.
Yeah.
First of all, if you're saying that existence like takes up space, how could people like want other people's existence, like the social media thing, like, oh, I want that existence. Like, for example, like what we said before, like with the Pokemon Go, how could I be like jealous of someone else's existence? Like, oh, I need that Pokemon. Like,
because remember what we said, it's a very good question, but remember what we said. Chevra, what's the one thing that existence is afraid of?
Diminishing.
Existence is afraid of dying. So existence's answer to death is, let me be as big as possible. So if I see somebody else is skiing in the Alps, I want to be skiing in the Alps. That's what existence says. I need that too. And if I see somebody else has this character, they've already achieved this level in Candy Crush, then I need to be able to come and say, I beat level 97 in Candy Crush, despite its apparent impossibility to beat. Yeah? And I need to walk around telling people, look, I beat level 97 in Candy Crush. So it's that's what existence wants. Yeah, second question.
Question two. You may have been getting a little deep for me, but like, what do you mean that people get crushed under their own existence? What happened?
When existence becomes so big that there's so many things that I'm juggling, I can't possibly keep it up anymore. It's too much for me. So let's take your average family, who Baruch Hashem can afford a nice house, but that mortgage is crushing. The pressure that comes with that, it's crushing. because I have to make sure that I have that amount of money every year in order to pay for that house. Now, who said you need such a big existence? There's a certain arrogance that comes with, I need to take up a lot of space, and I need to have the nicest car. And I'm not going to own my car, I'm going to lease my car. Of course, which always comes with the, yeah, it makes more financial sense to lease. I don't know, we grew up, we owned cars, we didn't know, not everybody leased their car. And then, not only that, your kids have to have a certain type of clothing, and we have to take a certain type of vacation, because we have to keep up with the Schwartzes, right? There's a tremendous arrogance to that type of life. In fact, Chevra, in fact, sometimes the more money you have, the worse it is. Because when you finally have this really good existence, and let's say you really achieve it, where you have the nice cars, and you have the nice house, and you're taking the nice vacations, and you have the nice clothing, however, then you're left asking one fundamental question. I have everything, but what is my life all about? And that is the most depressing thing of all. I'll tell you, Amaisa is a very chashuva doctor who's a very wealthy man. He's invested well for himself. He's a very wealthy man. Years and years and years ago, he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he came back from Eretz Yisrael on fire. On fire. And all of a sudden he was setting up chavrusas with Avreichim and Rosh Kol in the neighborhood, and all of a sudden he wanted his kids to be learning. It was unbelievable. The guy was just on fire. So one of the Avreichim that he learned with and that he wanted his kids to learn with was me. So it was great. I was so excited to learn with him. But I asked him, I said, what's going on? Like, you came back from Eretz Yisrael so on fire, like what happened to you in Israel? So he has a nephew, who Baruch Hashem is a very big Talmud Chacham, and this nephew took him around to all the different tzaddikim in Yerushalayim who needed medical attention, and he treated many, many of the tzaddikim in Yerushalayim. And he told me that there was more simchas achayim coming out of these. You know what it's like to go to these tzaddikim's homes, right? You go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky's home, you go to Ryan Leib Steinman's home. That homes, they're smaller than this Chadar Ochel where we're sitting right now. They're tiny. But there was so much simchas achayim there, and this is a man who lives in a huge mansion with a private pool and a workout facility in his house. His house is beautiful. It's beautiful. But he felt like, I'm missing something. Like, I have this amazing existence, but where is my life? And so all of a sudden, he's waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to learn, and all of a sudden, he's you know, doing whatever he can to get his kids into it. Because all of a sudden, it's like where was my life? And he was tremendously depressed. So what's the solution? The solution is to live. The solution is to stop worrying about existence so much and to start living. But what does that mean? And here's where I want to take Camp Hask as the example. However, to live means to contribute. To live means to give. So however, I want to tell you something unbelievable. Every year, at this point it's got to be hundreds of guys and girls are going to Camp Hask, and what are they doing? They're taking people who have special needs, and they're dedicating their summer to helping these people. So I want to tell you something. At the end of those summers, I get to see many of those guys who return to Eretz Yisrael for a Shana Bet. And in an entire year of yeshiva, I saw them change incredibly. But what they did from El of their Shana Aleph until the end of their Shana Aleph, and then what they did from the end of Shana Aleph to the end of the summer cannot be compared. Because the growth that I see from those guys in 2 months in the summer is 10 times what they did in a year in Israel. What's the pshat? What's the pshat? Is the pshat that they're around unbelievable people, which is of course true for those that have the schus of knowing any of those amazing people that work in Hask. Of course that's true. But however, that's not the answer. Oh, it's big. It's big. I'm not denying it. It's big. But that's not the answer. You know why it works? You know why people walk out of Camp Hask fundamentally changed? Because they're not worrying about existence at all. All they're doing is living life, contributing to someone else. It's they're living pure lives of chesed. For those 7-8 weeks, it's pure chesed. This past year, one of the guys came back from Hask. And I said to him, how was your summer? He goes, Rebbe, it was the hardest thing I ever did, and it changed me lechalutin. I'm a totally different person. He said, the first 3 days, I was so overwhelmed. I said, I can't possibly do this. I don't know how I'm going to make it through the summer. But then I realized, it's not about me. This person needs me. their existence is in my hands. I have to take care of them. And so he said, spend 8 weeks just worrying about somebody else. You're going to be a fundamentally enhanced person. And the guy told me, and I've heard this story hundreds of times, my davening is different. My learning is different. I take life more seriously. What's the pshat? Because they're actually living life. Remember, the life of the fire is that it contributed warmth. Chevra, you want to know what it means to be alive? You want to know what it means to be happy? Live life. Contribute. Do something. Give to somebody else. Stop worrying about yourself for a second. We're such a narcissistic generation. I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know if this makes me happy. I'm so concerned. I don't feel like why would I want to be an Eved Hashem? Calm down for a second. All of this, it's like there's a famous maaseh with the Lubavitcher Rebbe that somebody wrote to him a letter. I am not happy, I don't know what to do, I'm not happy in my marriage, I. So you know what the Rebbe responded to him? He circled all the letter I's in the entire letter and he sent it back. He didn't respond one word. Which was basically like a nice way of saying to him, like, if you'll calm down with your narcissism, a lot of these problems will go away. Which is an unbelievable thing to think about. And Chevra, you know something? They tell me that I can't say this year to this generation. And I say just the opposite. This generation is waiting to hear this year. Because everybody's pandering and saying, Yiddishkeit is going to give you the ultimate pleasure, and the best thing in the world is to learn a Black Gemara. Chevra, the sales pitch of Yiddishkeit is not what it's going to do for you. The sales pitch of Yiddishkeit is what you can do for the world. It's the exact opposite. Somebody came to me the other day, they were talking about what's better, to learn like only the Geshmak Gemaras with the guys, or to also learn like the not-so-Geshmak Gemaras with the guys. And I said, I don't even understand the question. It's not only about Geshmak. Like, Geshmak should not be driving this conversation. But if they don't enjoy it, they're not going to do it. I know, but isn't that part of what we need to be teaching people? That even when something is not-so-Geshmak, but still there's something called responsibility that you have to somebody else. Isn't that true, Kevin? And doesn't it inspire us when somebody tells us the truth and says, stop existing for yourself and start living for something bigger than yourself? Isn't that the most inspiring thing in the world, that I can contribute? That's what we're waiting to hear. We're not waiting for somebody to come along and say, I'm going to give you a great mussar through sports. Yeah, not to say that it's not exciting when we hear a Hakira in, you know, Kevin Durant playing for the Thunder versus playing for the Golden State Warriors, and how that ties into what's better, being a part of a system or taking it on your back, and a great Musa that the Rebbe developed because of that. Okay, it's all beautiful, but in a certain way, isn't it pandering to us a little bit? Don't we want somebody to come and speak high level to us and say, you're capable of making a difference in the world? Isn't that what we're waiting for? It's what we're waiting for. The truth of the matter is, think about a doctor. Think about a doctor who's working in an ER, and there's a terrible car crash, and he has victims coming in left and right. Does he stop to eat?
No.
Why not? Because somebody's life hangs in the balance. So it's not about me right now. And Adarava, how does that doctor feel at the end of his shift? If let's say he was able to save lives, he doesn't go, ugh, I'm so hungry. He doesn't say, I'm so hungry, because he just touched life. It's much bigger than that. By the way, this is what it means that the Aron, when we carried the Aron, that the Aron was Nose as Nosav. It carried those who carried it. Existence, remember we said before, existence is so heavy that sometimes if it's arrogant enough, it can crush you. Life is so light that when you live life, it actually lifts you up. So the craziest thing is you'll walk out of a place like Camp Ask. Yeah, or any one of those places where you're involved in chesed the entire day, you're going to walk out, and even though you were carrying those people for all of that time, how do you feel? You feel like you're mamish the lightest thing in the world. You feel like you're a feather. Somebody's carrying you. Because life carries you. That's what love is. How do you know when you love someone? When you feel lighter around them. When you feel like, even though I'm contributing so much, it's lifting me up. That's the definition of love. Chevra, this is why it's an unbelievable thing. What did the Egyptians do? What did the Egyptians do? They built pyramids. Why did they build pyramids?
Systems.
Yeah, because they're terrified. One day I'm going to die, and what's going to be left of me? So we have to make these enormous symbols. Why do we make these enormous symbols? We make these enormous symbols because we're saying, it's like, I can't let go of my existence. It has to survive beyond me. But really, Yidden are the exact opposite. In fact, the only thing we ever built was the Beis HaMikdash, and that's been destroyed twice. We really haven't built anything, if you think about it. The hallmark of Yiddishkeit today, where do we go? We go to a wall. And until very recently, we didn't even have access to that wall. And by the way, when we came back to that wall, it was a garbage dump. What's the pshat? The pshat is the secret of Jewish survival has nothing to do with existence. The Beis HaMikdash, and again, we're in the 9 days, and obviously we want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt in a very, very fast fashion, because it has to be before Tisha B'Av. We only have a couple of days already. But of course we want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. But Chevra, if the Beis HaMikdash could be destroyed and we could survive, what does that tell us? It tells us that the Beis HaMikdash is not the thing that's ensuring our survival. Adrabah, Chevra, what happened when we went into Golus? Right after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? What did we write? A Talmud Bavli. In Golus, the greatest work in Torah Shebaal Peh, that's when it was written, in Golus. Not in Zman of Gula. What's the pshat, Chevra? The pshat is, if you care about something that's more life than existence, then you could survive. All of those nations that attacked us, they're gone. They're gone. I mean, Yishmael remains. But the rest of them are gone. What's the pshat? Those are existence types of people. So how many people have ever asked the following question? What's the purpose of life? Everyone's asked that question, right? Chevra, is that a good question? It's not a good question. What would be a good question?
Purpose of existence.
Right. What's the purpose of life is not a good question. The purpose of life is life. Life is not the question. Life is the answer. The question is, what's the purpose of existence? And what's the answer to that question? The answer to the question is life. Why do I exist? That's what we're wondering. Why do I exist? It's the question that Yidden have been asking themselves for 4,000 years already. Why do I exist? I don't belong here. I'm in the Shammah. I belong in Shamayim. The answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you existence so that you could share your life with the rest of the world, and in that way create a dira b'tachtonim for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. You ever see an angry kid? Like, I'm talking like an 8-year-old kid who say, he took my stuff, or he touched my stuff. Yeah? Imagine, you know those little kids that are driving on a... And this is the worst thing as a parent. Don't ever do this. Don't ever take your kids on a road trip and expect your kids to behave. You ever see the kid that does this? He touched my seat on a road trip. There's nothing, as a parent, I can tell you, there's nothing more annoying than kids in the back seat fighting over, he's in my space. Right? It's the least amount of power you could possibly be fighting over. You're fighting over 12 inches on upholstery in a car. Yeah? This is not an intelligent fight. But why are kids fighting over space? Because kids have no life. It's the only thing they have. Is that little amount of space. That's the only thing they have. So that's what they're fighting over. It's the only thing that makes sense for them. That's where all this anger comes from. Angry teenagers. Yeah, I'm sure some of you have experienced this. Angry teenagers. What are you so angry about? What haven't you got? Yeah, you're in NCSY Cola for the summer. Your parents flew you halfway around the world and paid thousands of dollars for you to be here. What's the problem? Really, what's the problem? I don't know, they're just not doing enough for me. It's an impoverished mentality. Really, they're not doing enough for you? I talked to guys in yeshiva, you have a car? Yeah, of course. Of course you have a car? Yeah, of course. Why of course? Because your parents are so unbelievable to you that they give you so much because that's their life. But what do? We take it as like, because we have very little lives, because we don't really give to other people, because we don't contribute to the world, we're so obsessed with existence that we just want more. Chevra, that's what, if you really think about what Kabbalah Savicha Ve'asimecha means, you know what Kabbalah Savicha Ve'asimecha means? It means give up of your existence to those people who gave you existence, and by giving up of your existence, you're sharing your life with those people who gifted you with life. You have that? What did your parents give you? They gave you existence and life. So your father says, do me a favor, can you get me a cold glass of water? So what is he saying? He's saying stop being obsessed with your existence for a second, and if you could do me a favor and share, diminish your existence and share your life with me by doing something for me. And in that way, you're honoring the life that he gave to you. Yes, I am.
So therefore, like, that's why parents are like partners.
Correct. Very good. 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's what it means, that a parent is mamish, a partner with Hashem. He gave you existence and life. So just like you have to honor the Rebbeinu Shalom, you have to honor your parents. In the same exact way, Shai, very beautiful. Cover last Nakuda. Shabbos. Shabbos is a funny thing, no? 6 days a week you work, and on the seventh day you're not allowed to do anything creative. What's the pshat? The pshat is 6 days a week, you're enhancing existence. That's what you do. 6 days a week you work. Make sure your existence is taken care of. Because existence is important, because it has to sustain your life. But one day a week, and here I'd like to quote Dr. Benji Epstein, one day a week, just be. Don't do. Everything the whole week, 6 days a week you're doing. One day a week, stop being a human doing and start being a human being. It means just be, just live. Just live. Yeah, that's right, drop the mic. Yeah? We're so busy taking care of our existence that we forget to live. And by the way, that's why, to me, it's not an accident that in today's dar, people can't handle Shabbos. I need to be texting, Rabbi. I need to be on my phone. I can't not watch movies on Shabbos. That whole movement. You know what it is? It's because our existence has become so heavy that people don't know how to just be. I don't know how to be without my phone. 2 seconds, I can't be without my phone. So you want me to go 20? It's like, you know, smokers on a plane. Somehow they can't, if they were not on a plane, they're smoking. Once they're on the plane, they're not smoking. But the second that they can get into a smoking place in the airport, these people are like lighting up. So I can't go without texting. Why not? The answer is, I'm not blaming anyone. It's because existence has become so heavy. So chevra, this is what the Torah means when it tells us, ubacharta b'chayim, choose life, means stop focusing on existence. Start focusing on that which gives meaning to existence. This is what Am Yisrael Chai. We make a lechayim. Everything in Yiddishkeit is about chai. It's about chayis. Why? Because this is your contribution to the world. You were not brought to this world to do nothing. You were brought to this world because up until this point in creation, there was no point in you being here. But now that you're here, this is your opportunity to say your line. You have a contribution to make. You have your life to share. And no two lives are the same. That's why the Rebbeinu Shalom says no two faces are the same. Because everyone's life is different. So I want to bless all of us. And Chevra, I know we're here in a certain way in NCSY Kol. It's a selfish summer, just focusing on our own growth. But I want to encourage everyone to bring a little bit of Parksville to Beit Meir. Chevra, you have such unbelievable opportunities. You see somebody who's struggling. Say something nice. Be a Baal Chesed. You're on the basketball court. Be a Baal Chesed. You know what's an unbelievable thing? I shouldn't do this. So I'm about to do is Aser. I shouldn't do this. You want to know something unbelievable? Watch Judah Cohn on the basketball court. You know why? Because everybody in this camp knows that he's for sure. Listen, I don't want to get into an argument who's the best player, but he's the best player in camp. No, really, somebody else? Okay, but he's the best player in camp. Yeah? Watch him on the court. He's a Baal Chesed on the court. Not only with people on his own team, but he's going over to guys on the other team. And he's saying, this is how you should play defense, this is how you should do that. He's an unbelievable Baal Chesed. There's chesed opportunities everywhere we go. There's an opportunity to share your life everywhere with everyone. And chevra, we're here in the 9 days. Is there a more important message that we could talk about in the 9 days than v'ahavta l'recha kamocha? Is there a more important message than saying, stop existence, give up a little of your existence. Give up, stop, be mevater a little bit on your existence. And let's share our lives with each other. Because that's what the Rebbeinu Shalom wants. He wants us to share our lives with each other. That's why he created us. Chevra, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world because this is his life. So let's share the life that he gave us with everybody else.